Session number 3966, wheel number 8.
John Milne, tape number 8.
Still at a new room.
You were telling me about your brigade camp.
Yes, so there was all this preparation beforehand of get everything ready for the whole brigade to arrive in Nanuwu, and if you can visualize all these African troops arriving from the various parts of Nigeria for this brigade camp, which was a wonderful opportunity for a brigade to do brigade training. I wasn't involved in the actual brigade training because my job now was to be responsible for all the stores that we'd arranged to be delivered, to be checked in and issued out every day, the yams, all the foodstuffs. But the other thing was all the meats. I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go in with the lorry to Enugu in the cool of the morning and the dark, and all the cattle, all the meat had been killed, and as soon as by sort of 6 o'clock, these various meat of all sorts was then loaded onto the lorry, rushed back to in the cool of the morning to up on the high ground where we were in Enugu, and then that in the town had to be issued out to the various battalions. They were waiting for me, waiting for the meat to come, so it was a quick rush. Everything then had to be issued out to the various various battalions. They rushed off and started cooking it right away so it wouldn't go bad. So it was one terrific rush, starting from 5 o'clock in the morning, and by this time it was all out and finished by sort of just after seven. We were about 6 miles outside Enugu in a lovely open area, and so there's this rush every morning into Enugu. But if you can visualize, that was the meat side. In addition to that, of course, there was also all the other things. But again, there was all the foodstuffs for the Europeans that had to be collected. There was an arrangement.
What sort of food was that?
Yes, well, all the tinned food from the various stores. We had each battalion had made arrangements with the local trading firms in Enugu, who would supply their various messes with foodstuffs. So it was the responsibility of the mess caterers of the different battalions to give me their lists from before, so that I would, when I went down then at 9 o'clock to collect the rations for that day, I then left the orders for the next day. So there was no, all I had, my job was then to go down with the lorry, collect the stores, bring them back and just put them down in the sections, and then the Europeans concerned collected their own. And so this went on the whole time they were in camp. They were in camp for a fortnight, full training. But this, at the time, was also a golden opportunity for all the battalion commanders to be together. There was big conferences going on then, too, because there was a new reorganization going to take place in Nigeria. And this was a dual-purpose operation. Training grounds, areas around Enugu, which, of course, Enugu eventually became the area headquarters for number two area when they reorganized in 1934. It was rather interesting, this, because we had four battalions before. They now had six battalions, but it was only six battalions on paper. The same four battalions were reorganized to form the other two battalions. And like in Calabar, which I'll come to now, Calabar, in my case, the company was reduced, two companies were reduced to one, because one company was posted to the 6th Battalion. The other company, the headquarter company, was reduced. The band, every battalion had a band, by the way. I didn't mention that earlier on, which was great pride, and they were very... The band was reduced. We were just with a few buglers and a couple of drummers, but the whole band as such was amalgamated into an interband. So the headquarter company reduced to 27 other ranks. I was put in charge of that company, 27 men, which wasn't very big. It didn't sound a big job. But the RQMS went home and leave. There were retrenching people. They were cutting out the strength of the Europeans as well. So the RQMS went and leave, so there was no RQMS. The quartermaster was also, he was an old coaster, a fine old man. He was going home finished anyway, retired on his last tour. The captain and the adjutant now became captain, adjutant, quartermaster and everything. So we had a CO and one officer, which was the captain, adjutant and everything. We had one officer and the other, and I then took over the whole battalion stores as a young sergeant, responsible for the stores of the battalion, and of course 27 men in headquarter company. So that in itself was quite an achievement, but it was a very interesting time. I think I could mention a story here, but it's very important to me, but it mightn't be to anybody else. The quartermaster had been a Scot. He was Royal Scots, and he was nicknamed Tanky Taylor because by this time he was quite tubby. But he had been in World War One with the 3rd Battalion, so he'd served all his time with the 3rd Battalion, and of course, it was a famous character with all the old ancient with old NCOs in particular because they knew him from war days. Now, on the Salah Day, as we call it, this Mohammedan Sunday, I used to notice the old Malam, which I knew in a normal routine work. He used to go to the office because we didn't wear uniform on the Mohammedan Sunday Day. It was an ordinary day. It was Thursday at that time, but we did all our office work. And the old Malam used to go there, and I would see him going in, and he would be in there for quite a long time because my office happened to look up to the quartermaster store. But this time I didn't realise that I would be occupying that place. And I often wondered what used to go in. I knew that they would have a good chat. I could quite visualise. Anyway, the time came for me that I had to take over the stores from Captain Taylor, because the adjutant told me, he said, look, you're responsible for that. He said, I haven't time. I've got so much other work to do. You're responsible for taking over from the quartermaster and report everything. So I had officially to take everything over from Captain Taylor. So this first Thursday, I was there as usual. He said, come down and just come and see me on Thursday and we'll carry on still taking over the stores. So this was my introduction of what used to go on with the Malam. The Malam would come in, he would make his salutations of you clapping the hand, and he would be invited to come in, and of course he would salute Captain Taylor and Hauser, and Captain Taylor used to salute Captain Taylor as his father, and Captain Taylor would welcome him in as his son. It doesn't sound nice in English, but in the language it's beautiful. And there was these two old men, because they were old men, they would be invited in, and he would come in and sit down, and then the two of them would go through the various salutations and general talk and what was going on in the barracks, because the Malam was responsible indirectly for the welfare of African troops, especially Mohammedans, and they would generally discuss the welfare going on in barracks and of course reminiscence of past days and so on. So then Captain Taylor then turned round and pointed to me, and he said, Malam, he said, look, he said, this is your new father. He said, because next week, or very soon, I am going home to England for good. Of course, he said this in Hausa. He said, this is your new father, pointing to me. So the old Malam, he looked at me, you see, and then looked at Captain Taylor, and I could see them both having a little. And the old Malam, beautiful words in Hausa, he said, I don't think I could call him my father. I think he'll have to be my son. And of course I immediately cottoned on, and I said, yes, thanks be to God, that is so, or words to that effect, you see. So then, from then onwards, I took over that Thursday meeting, the same as Captain did. So the old Malam used to come in on Thursday, he would salute me as my son, I would welcome him in as my father, and Hauser, and he would welcome me as my son, ask how I was the good Lord looking after me all right, you know, Allah Yabakalafia, and So it went on, and we talked like that for a starter, and then we discussed various things in barracks. I mention this in detail because I'll quickly go on now. As far as Calabar was concerned, it was the general routine and to do because I was in Tarwillow store. Now, you've got the picture. A lot of Europeans were being... The whole strength was being cut down. They didn't have the money to pay them. Word came through. I was going home and leave and not coming back. It was my turn. I was going home and leave, and that's what's happening. If you went home and leave, you were pretty well... You weren't coming back. Of course, I was heartbroken. Quite honestly, I was. All the life in the barracks was the same, and you know, I've told you about one and the link with the families. And the day came, the afternoon before I was due to leave, and I was clearing everything up, and it was only a small office, and it hadn't much stores, so I'd handed over the stores, the quartermaster, and I was sort of this last afternoon, because I was due to leave the next morning. Not really, I was really heartbroken, quite honestly. When the old Malham came in, of course he came to see me, to bid me goodbye. And we had a long chat, for me to stand up to say goodbye to him. Now, I want you to listen to this. And then Hauser, we stood up, and looked at each other, because that's another point, I could tell you stories about it. Always look an African in the eye. The Africans will look you in the eye. Because you're known as the windows of your heart. And that's a lovely expression to you talk about swearing to, and you don't need to swear in Africa. You just tell them, stand up, you've got the eyes of a snake, open your eyes so that I can look into your heart and see what's going on. Your eyes are the windows of your heart. Anyway, the old Malham and I, just ourselves there, and we stood up and looked at each other, and he was wishing me well. And his last words were to me, he told me, he said, I can see how, you know, how cut up you are, is the word in English. Your heart is cut. But don't forget, he said, you are coming back to Nigeria. He said, you don't know now. He said, you will return to Nigeria. But there's one thing. Keep your heart as it is now. He said, you know what we call you? He quoted Dan Zauzo. He said, the way that you've taken an interest, that's what he meant, you know, and everything like that, you love Nigeria. He said, you're coming back. Allah will arrange it. But he said, don't forget, keep your heart as it is, and don't get big heads, what it means in English. Don't let your head get too big. Remember, he said, when you do come back, the King of England, because the King of England meant a lot to these people, he said, you will have one button on your shoulder, Anini as it's called. This is the star. He said, you will have two Aninis. You will have three Aninis. But still keep your heart as it is. Don't get big-headed. He said, and one day you will have a crown. He couldn't believe it. He said, that is the will of Allah. He said, it will come. And he said, those are my last words to you. Go now, go in peace. And that's that sort of thing. Now, this was told me in 1934, which was the day before I left Calabar. Next day I left Calabar by launch up to Ekotek Penny, and then down all the way around to Lagos by train, and went home to join my regiment, the Gordon Highlanders. I joined them in Aldershot, went to Gibraltar, and I was reposted back to the depot in 1935 as an sergeant instructor again, and then early in 1937 I was then posted back to Nigeria as a sergeant again. So back again to trips on the boat, Highland dancing, PT, jogging round the decks and so on, meeting up with various friends, and back into Nigeria. This time I was posted to Zaria, again, Dan Zauzo, by the grace of God, by Allah, again, back to Zaria, and then from there I was then in the 5th Battalion, which had two outstations. And then the one outstation was Maiduguri. So then I was posted to Maiduguri, which was an outstation, and I did 3 years in Maiduguri. But it was the same drill again. Here we are in an outstation. The usual company life, barracks, inspections, training, and making the best of things.
Did conditions change at all as war seemed nearer in Europe?
Yes, well, now I'm coming to that point. First of all, we were very conscious. You see, we never thought that we would be fighting against France. We were training for fighting in Africa. Now, as a point of interest, in 1937-38, which we call the wet season, but we were doing all Europeans, officers and BNCOs, had to prepare an appreciation of the situation of the terrain in East Africa and Abyssinia, covering, as say, 5 degrees south of the equator to, say, 20 degrees north. I forget how it was put over. But you had to study the maps. We were given various maps and extracts from the Italian Mussolini's campaign in Abyssinia, the Abyssinian War, and we had to study all those, and we had to make up our appreciation of the situation, which all army people will know, of the conditions and the types of warfare that would be used in that, from that south of the equator to north. Now, this was in 1938. So that we were all having a moan, having to study all these things, but there you are. Little did I realise within 2 years I would be covering the ground that I'd covered on paper. But this was one point. So that was our, the officers and NCOs had to do that. From our training point of view, we were then adapting our training for long-distance marching, which again became long-distance patrol work when we were on the NFD in Kenya. We experimented with camels, loading, and up in Maiduguri, we're right almost on the edge of the Sahara, and again, that was another experiment we used. We used camels to see the loading possibilities and the marching with them and timing, all this sort of thing. There were all sorts of little experiments going on like that as part of our training. And it was really amazing, but also it was a very interesting station to be in, because Maiduguri, as you can see, was a provincial headquarters again. There wasn't many Europeans because the majority were out. The DOs were out in their district. There was the education officer, there was a doctor, and of course the resident. There was various traders. So it was every month, at the end of every month, that was our only social events, really, because when the Europeans came in, we all met together, and I found there had been a golf course there in the edge of our barracks. So I resuscitated that, so we managed to have 9 holes. So, of course, every month then we had a little golf course. Our African soldiers kept it clean and tidy and that sort of thing. But so that any European that was there all the time were able to play golf at any time. We played football, made the best of it. We even played hockey, because that was another game in Calabar days. That was hockey. I didn't mention that. I just remember now we had mixed teams of hockey there, including two ladies. One was had been an international in England, so she was hot stuff. She was very good. I mean, and hockey. Anyway, I'm sidetracking. So we also had our social life, but another thing that was very interesting too, you were able, if you were interested, to go out with various Europeans in the government departments. Again, you could use your local leave accordingly. I was able, throughout the whole time I was in Maiduguri, went out with the vets, veterinary officer in particular, going around the cattle camps. You see, the various nomadic tribes used to meet in certain areas by arrangement, and he would meet them there and check up on their vaccinations, rinderpest and things like this. So they were only too pleased to have somebody to accompany them. And we used to work it out, make a long weekend of it. And he would work on the Sunday, so I could go out on the Saturday and travel down to whatever camp it was and stay with them the Sunday and Monday and then come back. Anyway, that was by arrangement. I went up with the district officer in various places to see them, and it was interesting to see the work sitting with their tribal chief and all the salutations that went on, and then the palavers about various lawsuits and things, and listening in. Of course, knowing the language, it was a great gift too. It was most interesting. The school inspector going around the village schools.
I believe you met your future wife on one of your trips.
Oh yes,
on the boat. Did you spend part of your local leave with her?
That was on our way. That was early in 1939. Going home in 39, I sort of met her, and of course that was during 39. And then when I returned, of course the war broke out in 39, I returned to Nigeria, of course, as soon as the war broke out. She got out just about the same time as me and went to another part of Nigeria. So I was able to go around and see her before we went round to the East African campaign. But up to 1940, I was in Maiduguri. And then, of course, I was then called into our 1st Battalion, which was Kaduna, and joined the 1st Battalion, and then as a Sergeant Major, or Sergeant Major by this time, to go around to the East African campaign. But there are other times, of course, as I say, we were in Maiduguri, and I took full advantage of visiting with the various government officers. I've missed out mentioning about the various mission societies I'd met. You see, there's so many things, if you were interested, you could...
Tell me about some of the... Because your wife was at a mission.
Yeah, my wife was at Church of England. She was CMS missionary. And she was down in the Enicha area, and then she was down in Umakia at the Women's Training Centre. And she was the Church of England representative. A friend of ours was the principal. She was a Methodist. And another friend who came from just outside Aberdeen was the Scottish mission. And so they had three Europeans, and there was the three mission societies, the three denominations, you would say, all working together, and they were training the African girls to be teachers, and it was a training centre, and it was most interesting. And this would happen too in various other areas too.
One final point, as it were, can you tell me about one of your band boys, W.U. Bassey?
Oh yes. Now in 1933, this again is very interesting, 1933, Umar Bassi joined as a band boy in Calabar, and he was one of four young lads. They all came from various mission schools, and the main qualification from our point of view was they were all good football players, and we were wanting good football players too. Well, Umar Bassi was a band boy, and he was in the band. Of course, when the band moved away from Enugu then, I sort of lost touch with him. But then when the war broke out, I linked up with him again, and he was Sergeant Major by this time, and he was expert in weapon training. It was really good. And anyway, to cut a long story short, I returned to... He was with me in the Abadan area. I was running a battle school by this time, and I came home on discharge. But in 1948, he came over to Eton Hall as a cadet officer to be an officer. And, of course, we linked up again. He found out my address and wrote me and told me that he was at Eton Hall. So, of course, we linked up, and I invited him to Sunderland, where I was living then with my wife and family. And, of course, he came and had his leave with us in Sunderland as a cadet. And then I had the honour of going to Eton Hall when he passed out as an officer. He'd specially asked that I would come, and would I wear my uniform, which the War Office wrote and told me that I had permission to do. So I was able to go to his passing out, and there I was in my uniform as a major, seeing him passing out as a lieutenant. And then on three other occasions he's been over in England and staying with us. He came over for the coronation, and came over for the Royal Tournament. There was something else, I forget now offhand, but anyway, on three other occasions. But of course now I've completely lost touch with him, and I don't know what has happened to him since the upheaval we had in Nigeria. He's lost. That is one of the problems with Africans. It happens to us as Britishers. We do not correspond enough with each other. And unfortunately, over the years, we lose touch.
And how do you look back now on your time in Africa?
My time in Africa, well, it was a very busy time. I'm very, very happy that I have been in Nigeria. I'm very grateful, and I appreciate all the help that was given to me, first of all by Africans, because all that happened to me in my first tour stood me and was a great experience, because I didn't realize that I would eventually be finishing up as a major and then having to give lectures to Europeans on how a word that I detest, African management, man management, or African handling of Africans, I should say, is the word I don't like. Because the thing is that you, with your own enthusiasm, they'll do anything for you. If you're interested in them, they can see that you are capable yourself. That is the thing. Know your own job first, and then they'll follow you. And they've got a terrific sense of loyalty. But the thing is to know them too and take an interest in them. And to me, I have such a lot to thank Nigeria for: the African soldiers, the loyalty, and also, of course, the all other Europeans of the different things who were also interested and very interesting to hear and meet up with. I had a Scot, he was in the survey department, he was sinking wells up on the edge of the Sahara. I used to go out with him and see these wells sunk. I don't know, the memories are so many. All the different houses up at Monganu and Kukawa, the rest house there was like a big beehive, because there wasn't sticks and that to make it. They were turned into like a little beehive and sunk in the ground, and you crouched in and that was your sort of rest house. Fortunately, I have photographs to bring these memories back. And also, you see, in my case, I have the good fortune that, having met my wife in West Africa, we were married in Freetown, and our oldest boy was born and baptized in Nigeria. And of course, she returned home during the war and stayed at home. But now I also have my wife to be able to share her memories of West Africa too. So you see, I have much to be thankful for. And I will leave it at that, and I'll give thanks to Allah. Nagodi Allah.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your memories with us.